Hello and welcome to our podcast, Within the Mist, a hidden place where we walk into the dark and clouded unknown. I am your soaked host, Gary, here to entertain and inform you about the likes of cryptids, ghosts, and other mysteries. I am joined by, sitting on the seashore, my wife and co-host, Goldie Ann. Hello, Goldie Ann.
Hey, Gary.
So what are you up to today?
Working.
Yes, Christmas can be quite an expensive season, so yes, I think both of us are working full tilt to get ready for the holiday season.
I hate working.
Well, hopefully I have some projects coming up that will start helping out with that, because if you listen to this episode or future episodes, you might see that there's going to be some addition of spots in the episodes as sponsors will be added to the show to help support our growth. So I will be adding in phrases like, and now a word from our sponsor, and then it'll be followed up by, and now back to the show. If there's no commercial in between, it's because it's a very weird concept, but different podcast providers work with different sponsors, so they put in their ads. So you might hear an ad on Spotify, but not on Apple. You might hear one on iHeart, but not on Podcast Addict. It's really weird how it works out, but I have to have these spots in there so that they know where to place them.
Aha. That should be interesting.
Yeah. Well, I do appreciate our audience's understanding of this, because this is the best way for us to help the show grow, and we can dedicate more and more time to it if we gain more and more sponsorships.
That's awesome.
But what else is awesome, Goldie Ann?
What?
Do you know what to feed a sea monster?
Seaweed.
No.
Oh.
Fish and chips.
Yeah, I saw that one coming.
And you didn't look away.
Nope.
I'm so proud of you. Now, today's episode involves the story of a creature that may be swimming just below the surface of a lake. These are giant monsters that may be upsetting to some of our listeners. We are storytellers who have gathered information on some of our favorite mysteries to bring to you. We don't attempt to scare our listeners on purpose. Well, maybe just a little. Listener discretion is always advised. And with that, we can talk about extending north into the Canadian province of Quebec and lying between New York and Vermont is what is sometimes referred to as the Sixth Great Lake, Lake Champlain. This 400 square miles of fresh water provides outdoor enthusiasts the opportunity for boating, fishing, water sports, and, most importantly, the search for an elusive lake monster that is said to make the depths there its home.
Awesome.
This creature, referred to as America's Loch Ness Monster, has been a part of the legends for centuries, making appearances every so often to the delight and terror of eyewitnesses. Hundreds have reported the sight of it. It is said to be between 6 and 25 feet long, with very smooth skin, a humpback, and no scales. It is not like any fish, but seems to be a long-lost dinosaur that escaped extinction. So join us today as we sail within the mist to discover Champ, the monster of Lake Champlain.
Cool.
Chapter 1, Native American Legends. The Abenaki and the Iroquois, people of the first tribes, resided and hunted the surrounding land near Lake Champlain long before the first settlers ever reached the shores of the New World. They have their own legends about a huge creature occupying the lake, which resembled a giant sea snake with horns on its heads and bumps along its skin. The Iroquois term for this creature is Onore, or horny serpent. The original story is related to an Iroquois legend of giant snakes said to be prowling in the Great Lakes. They would erupt from the water to capsize canoes and eat the people inside. It is said that their breath is often supposed to be poisonous.
Yeah, that right there would keep me out, like, completely. I don't do snakes at all.
Especially giant ones with horns and poisonous breath?
Any snake.
Okay.
Those are nope ropes.
Well, in some Iroquois traditions, the Anari would spare travelers who made offerings to it. In others, the people could protect themselves by invoking the thunder god, Hainan, mortal enemy of the Anari. So I have a story for you, Goldie, Ann.
Okay.
The one common story involving the Anari is the girl who was not satisfied with simple things. A Native American bedtime story for children. The story goes, there was once a girl who was not satisfied with simple things. Her parents despaired of ever finding her husband that she would accept. Each man who came was not good enough. That one is too fat. He will never do. Or, did you see how shabby his moccasins were? Or, I didn't like the way he spoke. Kind of a spoiled brat.
Or she just settling for waiting for Mr. Right. She ain't gonna settle.
Well, one night, as the fire flickered low, a strange young warrior came to their door. Come inside, said the mother. But the visitor stood at the edge of the light and pointed his hand at the girl. I have come to take you as my wife, he said. Now, this young man was very handsome. His face shone in the firelight, and above his waist was a fine, wide belt of black and yellow wampum that glittered like water. On his head he wore two tall feathers, and he moved with the grace of a willow tree in the wind. But the mother was worried. My daughter, she said, you would not take any of the men in our village. Would you marry a stranger whose clan you don't know? It was of no use, for at last the daughter was satisfied. She packed her belongings and walked into the night, following the handsome stranger. The girl walked for some time through the darkness with him when she began to feel afraid. Why had she left her mother's lodge to come with this man she had never seen? Just then, her husband grasped her arm. Do not fear, he said, whispering in the darkness. We will soon come to the place of my people.
Dun, dun, dun.
But, my husband, said the girl, how can that be? It seems we must be very close to the river. Her husband grasped her arm again. Follow me, he whispered. Just down this hill we have almost come to the place of my people. The two of them walked down a steep bank and came to a lodge which had a pair of horns, like those of a giant elk, fastened above the door. This is our home, the husband said. Tomorrow you will meet my people. The rest of the night the girl was afraid. She heard strange noises outside. She noticed that the lodge had a smell like that of a fish. She held her blankets tightly around her and waited wide-eyed for the morning. When the next day came, the sun did not shine. The gray sky was filled with hazy light. Her husband gave her a new dress, covered just like his with wampum. You must put this on, he said to the girl, before you are ready to meet my people. But the frightened girl would not touch the dress. It smells like fish, she said. I will not put it on. Her husband looked angry, but he said no more. Before long, he walked to the door of the lodge. I must go away for a time, he whispered. Do not leave this place, and do not be afraid of anything you see. And he was gone.
Yeah, this doesn't end well.
Well, the girl sat there, wondering about her fate. Why had she come with this strange man? She saw that if she had been satisfied with the simple things, this would not have happened. She thought of the fire in her mother's lodge. She thought of the simple, good-hearted men who had asked her to marry them. Just then, a great horned serpent crawled in through the door of the lodge. As she sat there, stiff with fear, It came up to her and stared a long time into her eyes. Around its bodies were glittering bands of yellow and black. Then it turned and crawled back out of the door. The girl followed slowly and peered outside. All around there were serpents, some lying on rocks, some crawling out of caves. Then she knew that her husband was not what he seemed, not a human being, but a serpent disguised in human form. Now this girl who had been foolish was a girl who was not without courage. She knew she would never agree to put on her husband's magical dress and become a great serpent herself. But how could she escape? She thought and thought, and finally, for she had gone the whole night without sleep, she closed her eyes and slept. Then, as she slept, it seemed to her an old man appeared in her dreams. "My granddaughter," said the old man in a clear, deep voice, "let me help you."
"What can I do, grandfather?" she asked.
"You must do as I say," the old man answered. "You must leave this place at once and run to the edge of the village. There you will see a tall, steep cliff. You must climb that cliff and not turn back, or your husband's people will stop you. When you have reached the top, I shall help you." When the girl awoke, she realized she had to follow the old man's words. She looked outside the lodge and saw her husband coming, dressed again in the form of a beautiful man. She knew she had to go at once or be caught in this place forever. So quick as a partridge flying up, she burst from the door of her husband's lodge and ran towards the cliffs. "Come back!" she heard her husband shout, but she did not look back. The cliffs were very, very far away. She ran as swiftly as she could. Then she began to hear a sound, a rustling noise like a wind rushing through the reeds, but she dared not look back. The cliffs were closer now. Then once more she heard her husband's voice close to her whispering, "Come back, my wife. Come, join my people." But now she had come to the cliffs and began to climb. She climbed and she climbed, using all of her strength, remembering the old man's promise as her hands grew painful and tired. Ahead of her was the top of the cliff, and as she reached it, she felt the hand of the old man lifting her to her feet. Here's where it gets very strange. She looked back and saw that she had just climbed up out of the water. Behind her were many great horned serpents in the depths. Then, as she watched, the old man began to hurl bolts of lightnings which struck the monsters. Then she knew that the old man was Hanno, the Thunderer. The lightning flashed and the thunder drums rolled across the sky. In the river, the serpents tried to escape, but the bolts of lightning struck them all. Then the storm ended, and the girl stood there, a gentle rain washing over her face as the Thunderer looked down on her. "You're very brave, my child," he said. "You have helped me rid the earth of those monsters. Perhaps I may call upon you again, for your deed has given you power." Then the old man raised his hand, and a single cloud drifted down to earth. He and the girl stepped into the cloud, which carried them back to her village. It is said that the girl later married a man whose heart was good and pure. Between them, they raised many fine children. It is also said that her grandfather came back to visit her many times. Often, she would fly with him to help rid the earth of these evil creatures that kept appearing, for the great serpent still hid in the depths of the water. When she was old, she always told her grandchildren these words: "Be satisfied with simple things."
Okay.
And so that is the Iroquois legend of what resides in Lake Champlain.
Have you noticed that the Native American lore is always more interesting than ours?
The Native Americans, all of their traditions was oral. So they had to refine their storytelling techniques because they didn't have it written down to where they would take shortcuts and stuff. So when you heard a story, you learned the story so that you could pass it on to the next generation. And I think that's what makes it richer.
And they're just always great stories, though. Just love them.
Well, this was their explanation for the serpent within Lake Champlain. Because for the rest of the settlers surrounding Lake Champlain, there were many of the same warnings about the dangers in the waters. Early in the 18th century, the Abenakis warned French explorers about disturbing the waters on the lake so as to not disturb the serpent underneath. Even Samuel de Champlain, whom the lake is named after, is often erroneously credited with being the first European to sight Champ in July of 1609. He had heard of the Iroquois legend, and he came out to explore it for himself. He described what he saw like this, quote,
"It was a 20-foot serpent as thick as a barrel, with a head like a horse. There was also a great abundance of many species of fish. Amongst others, there is one called by the natives Chawasaru, which is of various lengths, but the largest of them, as these tribes have told me, are 8 to 10 feet long. I have seen some 5 feet long, which were as big as my thigh, and had a head as large as 2 fists, with a snout 2.5 feet long, and a double row of very sharp, dangerous teeth. Its body has a good deal the shape of a pike, but is protected by scales of a silvery gray color, and so strong that a dagger could not pierce them."
So that sounds like a totally different thing.
To most historians, they think that what he actually saw was an alligator gar, which is a very large fish that can be found in fresh water that does have a long snout with a large amount of teeth. And he could have mistaken that for Champ.
Yeah.
Also, readings of his accounts show that the creatures he saw were near the St. Lawrence River and not actually Champ of Lake Champlain.
Ah, that explains it.
So, yeah, he's credited with being the first to document the sighting of Champ, but it really wasn't.
Was it really Champ?
No. That honor goes to someone else. Okay. Chapter 2, Captain Crum's Letter. The first documented account appears in the Plattsburgh Republican newspaper on Saturday, July 24th, 1819. To be honest, I was able to find a copy of this article on the internet, and it amazes me that libraries and stuff who've kept archives of all these newspapers are now digitizing them. So to be able to read a newspaper from 1819 just blows my mind.
That's cool.
It is really cool. And this article told about a Captain Crum who was aboard a scow on the Bawaga Bay of Lake Champlain. And on the previous Thursday morning, he reported seeing a monster rear more than 15 feet out of the water. The transcript of the article from the July 24th edition of the Plattsburgh Republican newspaper read that, quote,
"Mr. Printer, on Thursday last, the inhabitants on the shore of the Bawaga Bay were alarmed by the appearance of a monster, which, from the description, may be a relation of the great sea serpent. Captain Crum, who witnessed the sight, relates that about 8 o'clock in the morning, when pulling off the shore in a scow, he discovered at a distance of not more than 200 yards an unusual undulation of the surface of the water, which was followed by the appearance of a monster rearing its head more than 15 feet and moving with the utmost velocity to the south. At the same time it lashed its tail, there were 2 large sturgeons and a billfish which appeared to be engaged in pursuing the monster."
That's some brave fish.
"After the consternation occasioned by such a terrible spectacle had subsided, Captain Crumb took a particular survey of this particular animal, which he described to be about 187 feet long, its head flat with three teeth, two in the under and one in the upper jaw, in the shape similar to the seahorse. The collar was black, with a star in the forehead and a belt of red around the neck. Its body was about the size of a hogshead, which is a barrel, and it had bunches on the back as large as common potato barrels. The eyes were large and the color of peeled onions. He continued to move with astonishing rapidity towards the shore for about a minute, when suddenly he darted underwater and has not been seen since, although many fishing boats have been on the lookout. Captain Crumb informs me that he has sent an express to Captain Rich of Boston, communicating his intelligence, but is fearful that before his arrival, this disturber of our waters may be changed to a pickerel.
I'm not exactly sure what a pickerel is, but I'm thinking that it's some kind of imaginary creature.
Now, an uncelebrated engraver of the Battle of Plattsburgh is now at the place prepared to take a sketch of his terrific majesty, should he again make his appearance. I am, sir, with great respect, your obedient servant, Horse Mackerel.
Now, despite the strange name of the letter writer,
that's what I was about to say.
This is generally considered to be the first written report of a monster within the water of Lake Champlain. And what I find most interesting is the mentioning of the bands of black and red.
Right.
Fit the Iroquois legends. As remember how they described the Indian who transformed from a sea serpent, having wampums of different colors,
right,
and then transforming them into a snake. So it's really interesting that Captain Crumb's description fits that old legend. So could this have been the same sea serpent that both were describing? But, Goldie Ann, I know you, and you want physical evidence.
Right.
So Chapter 3, the 1849 Bones of Champ.
Oh, so he's dead?
you'll soon see. Now, this body of water was once directly connected to the Atlantic Ocean and enabled all manner of life to travel in and out of what is now a trapped lake. In fact, in 1849, as construction of a railway between Rutland and Burlington, Vermont was progressing, two Irish workmen who were working on the railroad made a startling discovery near the town of Charlotte. They unearthed an extremely large set of bones buried nearly 10 feet below the surface in a thick blue clay. At first, they assumed the bones were that of an old horse. They threw them off to the side and actually pretty much damaged the skull of the bones that they had found. While walking near the construction site, Charlotte resident John G. Thorpe observed the bone fragments in the dirt. Finding the bones to be unusual, he convinced the job overseer to move the work to another segment of the project to allow him the chance to study the collection of bones. Naturalist Zadok Thompson of the University of Vermont was called in to study the find. He immediately recognized the significance, as these bones were unlike that of any animal previously discovered in Vermont. He determined that these were not the bones of a horse, but were actually 12,000-year-old fossils resembling a beluga whale. This Charlotte whale, named after the town near which they were discovered, had existed in the oceans over 10,000 years ago.
Nice.
So, Goldie Ann, how did this saltwater animal come to be so far inland? Charlotte is over 150 miles from the nearest shore.
Obviously, it wasn't one of them.
Wasn't one of what?
A beluga whale.
Well, it kind of was and kind of wasn't, because Thompson was able to discover that this area of Lake Champlain was once salt water, known as the Champlain Sea, with a direct connection to the Atlantic Ocean, where marine mammals were free to come and go from the Atlantic. During its heyday, this sea covered an area of New England of over 20,500 square miles. This is about the size of West Virginia, in portions of Ontario, Quebec, New York, and Vermont.
Huh.
These findings of these bones proved that sea creatures once inhabited this water and may have become trapped when the connection to the ocean disappeared over time. They had no choice except to either evolve or die. Now, one example could be a plesiosaur-type sea monster that used to swim in the Atlantic Ocean and was cut off from the water and managed to survive. The lake holds many fish found today that are evolved from saltwater ancestors. However, Champ would have had to survive and evolve over 65 million years since the extinction of the plesiosaur. An interesting bit of trivia connected to this is that the Charlotte whale, those original bones, were declared the official state fossil in 1993.
That wasn't that long ago.
No. I thought it was kind of neat that states even had a state fossil. I have no idea what Florida's or Ohio's or any of those, even if they have a state fossil, or what it would be. So this is all to prove that Lake Champlain could, at one time, had saltwater creatures such as whales or plesiosaurs.
Okay.
Chapter 4, A Busy Year for Champ. As the population of settlers moving into the region of Lake Champlain increased, so did the reports of sightings of the creature. 1873 was a busy year for Champ, as its existence became a national speculation, and reports and newspaper articles came in on an almost weekly basis. A New York Times story reported that a railroad crew had seen the head of an enormous serpent in Lake Champlain, with bright silvery scales that glistened in the sun. Both the men and the monster parted ways at that point. In July of that same year, Clinton County Sheriff Nathan H. Mooney reported seeing an enormous snake or water serpent. He thought the creature was 25 to 35 feet long. So there's a large nope rope for you, Goldie.
Yeah, way too large.
Then, in August, the steamship W.B. Eddy encountered Champ by actually running into the creature. The ship nearly overturned, according to the tourists on board.
Oh, yeah, I'd die of a heart attack.
Well, luckily, Champ wasn't injured, and the ship made it to its destination without tipping over or drowning any of the passengers.
Okay.
But I guess you got to be careful where you steer when you're on Lake Champlain. Also during this year, proving just how busy it was, a Burlington marble mill worker named J.P. Farmer told the Burlington Free Press that he saw a marine monster while fishing in Shelbourne Bay. He described the monster as, quote, an animal with a brownish body, seemingly from 12 to 15 feet in length, and having a large head in the shape of a bull's nose. So I guess kind of roundish, barrel-shaped?
Yeah.
The excitement regarding Champ reached its highest peak when, never one to miss a trick, showman P.T. Barnum even offered a reward of $50,000 in 1873 for the hide of the Great Champlain Serpent to add to his Woolly Mammoth's World Fair show.
Rude.
Well, luckily or unluckily, the reward went never collected. Yet, the sightings continued. Chapter 5. The Capture of an Infant Champ.
What? I haven't heard this one.
Well, then you're in for a treat. In John Kirk's book, In the Domain of the Lake Monsters, he wrote about a Dennis Hall who had personally encountered the creature on several occasions and had attempted to obtain several photographs and videotape evidence.
In fact, Dennis may be the only person to ever capture a champ specimen. In the 1970s, Dennis discovered an unusual-looking 12-inch-long reptile in a marshy area bordering the lake. As a young boy, the creature looked like no other living reptile, and it possessed a strange forked tongue. Upon inspecting the creature, Dennis's father thought the beastie strange enough to be worthy of examination by the scientists at the University of Vermont, who, when they looked at it, indicated that it was unlike any living reptile in their catalog of creatures. Unfortunately, and this is why you never heard of it, Goldie Ann, like so many cryptozoological creatures' evidence, this one was somehow lost and thereby losing any proof to the existence of the creature.
Of course it was.
So we were so close to having one and slipped through some university researcher's fingers. Dennis subsequently saw what he thought was the spitting image of the creature he once possessed in a book on prehistoric reptiles. The Tanystropheus, extinct for millions of years, appeared to be the long-lost twin of Hall's 12-inch specimen that he captured. Although considerably larger and with a long neck, this ancient dinosaur enjoyed a semi-aquatic existence, much like Champ does today. Dennis Hall never gave up on his pursuit of the creature or the hopes of rediscovering it.
I bet he was pissed.
Well, yeah, you catch a dinosaur and then someone loses it or stole it, more likely. So could you imagine someone has a dinosaur, has a champ in their bathtub?
Yeah.
All right. So we still have the bones. We lost the baby champ. How about if I give you some other evidence, Goldie Ann?
Okay.
Chapter 6. Photos, videos, and sounds, oh my. On July 5th, 1977, near St. Albans, Vermont, Sandra Monsey, with her husband and two children, were enjoying an afternoon car ride when they decided to pull over for a stroll along the beach of Lake Champlain. Resting on the shore of the water, Monsey was watching her kids splash around in the water when she saw something. She called for her children to back away from the edge of the water. Her family and she were able to observe the creature swimming just in front of them for 5 to 6 minutes. She pulled out her Instamatic camera and she was able to take a famous snapshot of what she saw. In the photograph is a blurry image of something whose head is standing out 6 feet from the water surface, with another 12 feet of its body exposed above the water.
Cool.
And that's what the picture looks like. So according to her, that's Champ.
Interesting.
Does it look like a plesiosaur to you?
Kind of. Maybe a whale tail.
Well, there's not supposed to be whales there either.
True.
So either way, it's kind of looks like something that shouldn't be there. Evaluations of this photo in 1981 by the University of Arizona Optical Sciences Center stated that there was no evidence of tampering that could have been found. But there was also no way to confirm whether it depicted an animate or inanimate object. There have been claims since that time that what she took the picture of was a log floating out in the water.
Well, it didn't look like a log either.
There's a lot of people who claim that it is. According to a 2003 interview with Monsey, she still holds that the photograph is genuine and was quoted as saying, "I think I saw some kind of dinosaur that day. It wasn't a fish. No fish can hold itself up out of the water 6 to 8 feet." By 1992, sightings totaled over 300, with approximately 600 people claiming to have seen Champ all over the lake. Eager children would cross the lake by ferry, often looking for the lake monster, hoping for their sighting of Champ.
Yeah, I'd do that.
Kind of would be fun. A few people even managed to snap photos of what they claimed to be Champ.
And much like his mystical relative at Loch Ness, Champ's sightings and photos are very much debated and analyzed. And as of yet, none have been conclusively proven to the animal's existence. In 2005, there's a video of mysterious large ripples in the lake taken by Charlotte's Peter Baudette, and it has also been claimed to be Champ swimming just below the surface.
We're gonna watch it?
Yep.
All right.
So in the video, you can see a kind of a hump and rippling all around it. But there's no head, nothing to really give it scale, so that's kind of why most people have kind of passed it up. But obviously, there's something.
Yeah, there's something living there.
Yeah, because it's
moving. Wow.
Yeah, like I said, you can see that it's moving. And
pretty darn long. Is there any, like, alligators there?
Not alligators, but there are alligator gars. Remember those fish that I told you about before?
Right, but they're not that big. That's pretty darn big.
Yes, I know. So this could be sightings of Champ swimming around in the middle of the water, caught on video. And
wow.
There it disappears.
Okay, that is kind of... That's cool. Oh, and that's just a really long snake. Oh, God, I don't know.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, on February 22nd of 2006, ABC News obtained an exclusive video of something just under the surface of the lake that they say may be Champ. The video included humps and what appears to be a long, slender neck with a monstrous head, and it was taken by two fishermen with their digital camera. Since originally posting it, they did take it down, so I'm not sure if it was invalidated or if it was just undergoing study. So it kind of disappeared, and I'm not sure what happened to it.
Of course it did.
Well, in 1993, a Japanese team came all the way across the oceans to search the entire lake with 15 boats and multiple helicopters. The only thing they came back with was a sonar report indicating that there was something very large, about 20 feet long, passing underneath one of their boats.
That's pretty cool, too.
Mm-hmm. So they do have a sonar image of a creature 20 feet long in the water. In 2003, the Discovery Channel did a special on what they called America's Loch Ness Monster. The team picked up a high-pitched ticking and chirping noise, like what a dolphin or a whale makes. Goldie Ann, you and I have been to SeaWorld many times, so we're kind of familiar with what that sound is.
All right.
There, obviously, these creatures would not be in freshwater, many miles away from the ocean. So what creature in Lake Champlain sounds like a whale, but lives in freshwater?
Champy.
Exactly. What's great is that you can even listen to some of Champ's sounds captured on July 31st of 2014, when monster hunters electronically captured loud, deep sounds in a region called Scotch Bonnet, providing some of the most compelling scientific evidence to date of the unknown aquatic animal.
That's pretty cool, too.
So, Goldie Ann, would you like to hear what...
Yes. That's cool. Just sounds like a bird underwater, though.
A bird underwater?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to play it one more time. Yeah, I don't hear a bird, but yeah, I can't really identify what that tickling sound really is. Chapter 7. Champ of today. Although many people are skeptical of sightings of Champ, he is now protected by law on both sides of Lake Champlain, just in case he does exist.
That's pretty cool, too.
In 1981, Bawaga Bay has since been called Champy's home base, due to the multitude of supposed sightings. Port Henry made the most of the legend by erecting a sign near the bay listing all of the reported sightings, as well as passing a symbolic resolution for declaring the lake
a safe haven for Champ. The state of Vermont upped the ante, and in 1982, they passed a House resolution protecting Champ.
That's cool.
1983, New York, both the state assembly and the state senate passed resolutions protecting Champ and encouraged citizens to photograph the alleged sightings during the next year. So with Lake Champlain being between Vermont and New York, now both states on either side of Champ's home ground now have declared that he is a protected animal.
That's cool.
Today, Champ is celebrated, whether he exists or not. In fact, in 2005, the Vermont Expos, who were the minor league farm team for the Washington Nationals, changed their name to the Vermont Lake Monsters, and they have a Champ mascot on their uniforms. Port Henry, New York, celebrates Champ's existence with their annual Champ Day. This happens on the first Saturday in August. So there's a carnival that goes on that celebrates everything that has to do with Champ as well. The hunt for the existence of Champ has not slowed. Sightings, which numbered in the double digits each summer, have encouraged interest from Japanese television, The Today Show, Unsolved Mysteries, and Fox's Network Sightings. Champ has been written about in Discovery magazines and in journals throughout the years. There is even a Champ statue that sits by the water in Port Henry, and images of the monster, looking cheerful and not scary, appear throughout the area at local businesses, t-shirts, children's books, and more. There's even a historical marker that sits on the shore in Clinton County in honor of everyone's favorite lake monster.
Oh, good. I like that. Well, I've always liked him. I think he's cool. I call him Champy, though.
There is a lot of people who do call him Champy, so it kind of bounces between Champ and Champy. I guess it's just on how well you know him.
All right. Well, we're friends.
Oh, I didn't realize you were on the close. I did not realize that you guys had such a close relationship.
I guess we do.
Well, regardless of their source, sighting of Champy and the legend that surrounds this lake monster have been welcomed by the population in the Lake Champlain region as an attraction for tourists and a fun symbol of community pride. Could this be the horny serpent of the ancient Iroquois legends? Could this be a man who can magically change into a giant sea serpent?
Nah, I think that's creepy.
Well,
let's just keep him with Champy.
Well, then is it a possibility that it was a trapped ancestor of those marine mammals that once traveled back and forth to the sea and has since evolved to exist in fresh water?
Yes.
I figured you'd like that version. And as new sightings continue every year, perhaps we will get our answer someday. So I think it's time to come off the shores of Lake Champlain and make our way back out from within the mist. We are on social media and would love to hear your stories and opinions about Champ. Do you think Lake Champlain holds its very own Loch Ness Monster? You can reach us on Facebook page Within the Mist Podcast, and we are also on Instagram and Twitter. Plus, we have an email at withinthemistpodcast@gmail.com for any of you who would like to share your stories. We hope you enjoyed our tale of Champ and will come again for another episode. Until then, look closely at the ripples on the water and remain constantly curious. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.